We're lucky. We have Representative Chris Gibson, Republican of New York's 19th District, a man who said, okay, I said I was going to serve a couple of terms. I am serving a couple of terms, but I do believe in term limits. Okay, so let's talk first about term limits, Chris Gibson. Why are they so important?
Well, first of all, thanks again for the opportunity to be back with you. And this is a topic that, having taught government for 3 years at the United States Military Academy, I'm very familiar with the arguments on both sides, actually. And they're pretty strong ones on both sides. But when you take a look at where we are today in the early part of the 21st century, I'm of the mind that because of the pervasiveness of money and politics, that, you know, if we want to recapture this spirit of one person, one vote, among the reforms that we're going to need to enact, term limits are among them. You know, you take a look at the founding of our country, and interestingly enough, you'll find what was described as rotation of office in the Articles of Confederation. Now, when we moved from the Articles to the Constitution, we didn't carry it over, but it doesn't mean that our founders gave up on that. In fact, they very deliberately chose a narrow constitution. In fact, the first 10 amendments, our Bill of Rights, aren't even in the Constitution. They are amendments. And after all, our first president felt so strongly about it that he self-imposed those term limits. The whole point is this: we were never meant to have a permanent political class. It was believed then that most Americans would be of the ethos that they were never, they shouldn't be serving forever. They should serve for a period of time and go back home. But what we have seen over the last 200 plus years is that hasn't been the case, that we have folks who get in office. They use the strength of the office to really bolster their name recognition and get what we would describe as entrenched. And then, you know, the power of the human mind to rationalize is vast. So, you know, I serve with good folks. You know, many of them are of the mind that there's no one in their district that could serve as a well, I mean, they really do. And I mean, I would laugh, too, because, you know, as hard as I've tried, and I certainly have given it my best every day, and I believe that we are, in fact, having the most effective session or Congress to date, my representation in the 19th. But I wouldn't say that for a moment. I mean, I've met dozens of people throughout my district I think would do a terrific job representing the Hudson Valley, the Catskill Mountain region, parts of central New York, and parts of the Capital District in the United States Congress. So I think we're at a point where we have to recognize the reality we're in, and I think that we should enact term limits.
Now, Chris Gibson, I love what you say because I happen to agree with it. But my rather pompous political science colleagues look down their noses at me and quite frequently say, but don't you see, Alan, that people are being, when you have term limits, people are being deprived of electing those they want?
Well, I hear these arguments, and I hear arguments where the expertise is so necessary, and the spin up or the learning curve of the job is such that if you enact term limits, you're really just handing over power to the unelected staff. I do reject that. I reject that notion. I've gone through this now. I would say that probably at least 90%, if not 95% of what a member does, one does in that first year. So not to say there aren't some exceptional stuff, but mostly Congress is schedule bound. So you'll actually go through the same, say, appropriations bill. You go through the same process the next year within a week or two of when you went through it the previous year. So, you know, these arguments that, well, we have to have, we should not have term limits because that way we can have continuity and institutional memory. I don't agree because after that first year, really, with very few exceptions, I was prepared for everything that came my way in the subsequent year. So,
well, I'm not trying to butter you up, Chris Gibson, but you are one of the smartest men I've ever met in my whole life. Maybe not everybody is as smart as you are.
Well, first of all, you need to get out more often, I'd say. But, you know, beyond that, look, you know, this is really a central point of trust in our government. And, you know, the ability for us to be self-governing. This was such a remarkable thing that we did for humanity in the 18th century, this idea that we could be self-governing in an era where about 90-95% of our people were farmers. The idea that farmers could be self-governing, certainly the heads of Europe, the kings and queens and Aristotle, they scoffed at us. They gave us no hope and no, you know, they didn't think this was going to work out. In fact, they thought we would beg for us to bring them back. And if we think that's certainly I disagree with that notion. But, you know, look what happened in France. That's exactly what happened after a decade or so of constant turmoil. In the revolution, they begged for the monarchy to come back. So this was the prevailing wisdom back then. We proved them wrong. We have shown that this self-governing people not only survived, we flourished. And so we're at a point today, I think, where many Americans, and we have so many challenges. But I have to say this, that among arguably the most serious challenge we have is our loss of faith in our ability to be self-governing. I have tried to make this a central point of my service, whether it be returning my pension back to the Treasury so I didn't double dip, or self-imposing term limits, or working 7 days a week. I have tried really hard, regardless of people who voted for me or not, that they believe that I'm trying hard to represent them, that we can be self-governing. And I think that given the pervasiveness of money, we're going to have to, I believe, as a people, bring forward a series of reforms that revitalize our democracy. And I think term limits needs to be part of it.
But while I agree with you, being a cynic, I wonder, you know, how that's going to happen. You got a bunch of people sitting there. They're not going to vote to limit themselves.
Well, I mean, that's a fair question, right? I mean, I have co-sponsored legislation in the United States Congress to enact term limits. Well, I think there's 9 of us that have done that. So you can see that it is...
That's 9 out of 435, I might imagine.
So, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not going to be enacted anytime soon. So I've self-imposed those term limits. But look, I think that this is among the reasons why I think that New Yorkers should very seriously consider a constitutional convention. Look, Alan, I'm very aware. A lot of folks are very trepidatious about this, and there are a fair number of folks who are opposed to this. But when you consider the consequences of where we're at today, I think there are multiple avenues to enact some of these reforms that are necessary. I would add term limits. I would add campaign finance reform and independent redistricting. I would call those the top three in terms of reforms that are necessary to revitalize our democracy. And as I survey the landscape, I think that we can't rule out a constitutional convention. I think if we had a tightly worded platform of initiatives that we were going to try to advance, now there's no guarantee on these things. Once you open up a constitutional convention, anything is in order. But I think if there was momentum behind reform, tight reform, then some of the critics of the Constitutional Convention, some of the, you might even say, strong voices for things that, you know, they're concerned that they would lose in a Constitutional Convention. I think if there was enough broad support for tight, narrow reforms, we could allay some of those concerns and perhaps get the momentum behind these necessary reforms.
You know, Chris Gibson, I would agree with you, and I love what you have to say, and I wish you were right. But I have the feeling that when Irving, who serves in the state legislature, gets a chance to get his cousin Melvin elected, he's going to do that. And then it's going to be more of the same old, same old.
Well, this is always a danger. These processes are over 3 years' time. In 2017, the voters of New York will go to the polls and decide whether or not they want to have a constitutional convention. That allows for, in 2018... the selection of delegates, and that would be an open process. So,
yeah, open, but it's open schmopen, but it'll be the same guys calling the shots who get elected to the legislature.
Well, I mean, that's you're making the assumption that reform-minded delegates would not be elected. I have to have more hope than that, that we would be able to get reform-minded delegates elected. And then ultimately, if we vote for a constitutional convention, and if we seat reform-minded delegates, then we would have the opportunity to review their product and decide up or down whether or not to enact it. That would happen in 2019 or 2020. So I would just say to the listeners out there, keep an open mind. I know there's a lot of strong voices against this. I would say keep an open mind at this point and see what occurs and see what develops.
You're terrific. Chris Gibson, always thinking, always out ahead. Very much appreciate what you're saying, Chris, and thanks so much for being with us. When we come back, I'm going to just name a first name and a last name, and you'll tell me what's going on, okay?
Okay. Thank you. Best wishes to all the listeners out there, too.